mayo en el estado de Veracruz y urgió al gobierno a investigar a fondo el crimen.
Irina Bokova reiteró que los ataques a los medios de comunicación afectan a toda la sociedad y socavan la libertad de expresión. Manuel Santiago Torres González, de 48 años, era editor del sitio de internet Noticias MT y corresponsal de radio y televisión. El periodista recibió un disparo en la cabeza cuando caminaba hacia su casa en la ciudad de Poza Rica, después de cubrir un evento de campaña electoral en la vecina localidad de Tuxpan. Según el Comité para la Protección de Periodistas, Torres González es el sexto comunicador asesinado en México en lo que va de año y el segundo en el estado de Veracruz. Giselle Ducaten-Seiler, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Miles de manifestantes en Albuquerque, Nuevo México, protestaron por la visita del virtual candidato republicano a la presidencia de Estados Unidos, Donald Trump. Diarios locales reportan que pese a la presencia de policías antimotines, los manifestantes lograron pasar barricadas y acercarse a un centro de convenciones donde el multimillonario se presentó el martes. Las protestas también se produjeron en el evento con al menos media docena de interrupciones al discurso del candidato. Trump se ha destacado por atacar a la comunidad mexicana, musulmana y a las mujeres y ha alentado acciones violentas de sus seguidores contra manifestantes pacíficos.
Esas notas breves fueron preparadas por Norma Martínez. El presidente Barack Obama arribó a Japón el miércoles para participar en la cumbre del Grupo de los Siete que se celebra el jueves y viernes. Obama también incluye en su visita a la ciudad de Hiroshima, donde el gobierno estadounidense matara decenas de miles de hombres, mujeres y niños durante la Segunda Guerra Mundial. Aunque algunos esperan una disculpa de Obama por el acto terrorista con bombas atómicas, el primer mandatario no ha dado ningún indicio sobre planes de ese tipo. Por otro lado, continúan las protestas en Japón por la presencia de militares estadounidenses en el país. Los residentes se quejan de asaltos violentos y abusos sexuales por parte del personal de las bases militares. Aliana Nieves amplía la información.
El primer ministro japonés Shinzo Abe prevé abordar el debate sobre la presencia militar estadounidense en Okinawa con Barack Obama durante su visita al país asiático. En especial discutirá cómo prevenir los crímenes de los empleados que tiene Washington en sus bases en la zona. La semana pasada, un civil que trabajaba en una instalación militar norteamericana en esta isla fue detenido por su presunta vinculación con el asesinato de una mujer japonesa. Y es que Okinawa alberga la mayor parte de las fuerzas estadounidenses en Japón. Se trata de 32 bases norteamericanas donde están desplegados 25.000 soldados. Muchos habitantes de la región ven esta situación como una ocupación injusta y también la asocian con la delincuencia. Uno de los casos más graves se produjo en septiembre del año 1955, cuando un soldado norteamericano secuestró a una niña japonesa. Al día siguiente, el cuerpo de la menor fue hallado en un vertedero de basura. En el año 1995, tres soldados de Estados Unidos violaron a una niña de 12 años, lo cual desembocó en protestas de decenas de miles de japoneses. Y en febrero del año 2008, un infante de la Marina norteamericana agredió a un adolescente. Sobre este asunto, el politólogo y analista internacional Miguel Candelas opina que Washington cuenta con un gran poder para defender a sus militares que cometen crímenes.
Estados Unidos como superpotencia, pues yo creo que en las bases militares que tiene desplegado a lo largo y ancho del planeta, pues siempre han sentido una cierta inmunidad, en el sentido de que en el momento en el que un militar estadounidense a lo mejor ha cometido un delito, un presunto delito, inmediatamente siempre el Estado estadounidense le defiende, ¿no? En fin, tiene toda una estructura de poder detrás, entonces sí que puede existir ese sentimiento de impunidad. Al margen de esto, lo que sí es verdad es que este tipo de bases que tiene Estados Unidos en el Pacífico, y no solo en el Pacífico, pues provocan mucha tensión, porque este tipo de episodios como el que se produjo ahora hace unos días es relativamente frecuente, o sea, puede suceder y sucede de hecho. Y entonces, por ejemplo, en Okinawa pues ahora mismo hay un movimiento muy 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 fuerte de protesta, coincidiendo además con la visita de Barack Obama estos días a Japón, y empezando por el gobernador de Okinawa a la cabeza, pero gran parte de su población, muchos movimientos vienen protestando no solo ya contra los abusos que se producen en las bases estadounidenses, sino en general contra lo que supone que su país esté, por así decirlo, con una soberanía de defensa muy limitada por todas esas bases que tienen los estadounidenses en el territorio y especialmente en Okinawa.
En otras noticias, oficiales de Naciones Unidas dicen estar preocupados por la marginación que sufren los pueblos originarios en la Argentina. Giselle Lukaten-Zeiler tiene los detalles.
El relator especial de la ONU sobre el racismo instó este martes a Argentina a tomar medidas urgentes para hacer frente a la marginación que sufren los pueblos indígenas, uno de los grupos más vulnerables del país. Mutuma Rutere acaba de finalizar una visita a Argentina para evaluar la situación de esas comunidades, así como de afrodescendientes inmigrantes. El experto reconoció que el país sudamericano cuenta con un marco jurídico amplio para la eliminación de la discriminación racial y la igualdad de derechos para todos sus habitantes. Sin embargo, indicó que la aplicación de las leyes es deficiente y persisten importantes desafíos. Añadió que la situación de los pueblos indígenas en ciertas áreas es terrible, ya que viven en la pobreza extrema, en un aislamiento sociocultural y sin acceso a servicios básicos como la salud, una vivienda decente e incluso el agua potable. Asimismo, señaló que es alarmante la represión que se hace en distintas partes del Estado de las movilizaciones de grupos indígenas para reclamar sus derechos. Destacó también la impunidad de la que gozan las fuerzas de seguridad en los casos de discriminación racial y subrayó que la ausencia de una política eficaz de integración de los migrantes contribuye aún más a la marginalización de este grupo. Giselle Lukaten-Zeiler, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
Reconocidas entidades internacionales señalan que para alcanzar el desarrollo sostenible en América Latina, el sector privado y la sociedad civil deben tener un diálogo adecuado. Rocío Franco reporta.
La secretaria ejecutiva de la Comisión Económica para América Latina y el Caribe, la CEPAL, afirmó este martes que para implementar con éxito la nueva Agenda para el Desarrollo Sostenible 2030, se requiere trazar una dirección clara y un diálogo diferente con el sector privado y la sociedad civil. Alicia Bárcena inauguró junto al presidente de México, Enrique Peña Nieto, el 36 periodo de sesiones de la CEPAL. Bárcena señaló que el documento presentado en ese encuentro, Horizonte 2030, la igualdad en el centro del desarrollo sostenible, es una propuesta técnica y de carácter político que pide una acción coordinada entre países grandes y pequeños.
Me alegro que esté aquí presente tantos representantes del Caribe, porque nosotros, América Latina, tenemos una deuda con los países del Caribe. Y tenemos que sentarnos, países grandes, pequeños, del norte y del sur, para enfrentar la urgente recuperación del crecimiento mundial, cautelar el empleo y enfrentar, francamente, la crisis humanitaria que padecen más de 60 millones de migrantes.
Por su parte, el mandatario mexicano Enrique Peña Nieto destacó la activa participación de su país en la definición de los objetivos de desarrollo sostenible, enriqueciéndolo con temas centrados en la inclusión y sugiriendo que su éxito se midiera por su capacidad de generar sociedades más equitativas. La reunión del 36 periodo de sesiones de la CEPAL se extenderá hasta el viernes y discutirá la nueva agenda para el desarrollo a través del documento Horizontes 2030. Rocío Franco, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
En Caracas, Venezuela, miles de mujeres chavistas marcharon para repudiar un supuesto plan de la derecha. Las manifestantes dicen que la oposición está detrás de las agresiones que buscan desestabilizar el gobierno. La jornada ocurre al tiempo que se desarrollan importantes encuentros en el país sudamericano. Erika Ortega Sanoja tiene más detalles.
El presidente de la República, Nicolás Maduro, recibió la visita oficial del canciller cubano, Bruno Rodríguez. Lo hizo el lunes en la noche en el Palacio de Miraflores, donde se encontró con él luego de un periplo que llevó a cabo por Trinidad y Tobago y también por Jamaica. Este martes, la canciller venezolana, Delcy Rodríguez, llevó a su invitado hacia a dos centros asistenciales de salud, donde pudieron constatar el estado de algunos de estos centros que operan con la cooperación binacional. Vamos a escuchar palabras de lo que dijo el canciller Bruno Rodríguez cuando se refirió a la situación actual de Venezuela.
América Latina y el Caribe están bajo una acometida imperialista, oligárquica, golpista incluso. Y aquí uno se da cuenta la lucha extraordinaria que desarrolla el pueblo venezolano. Y las compañeras y compañeros, frente al intento de la derecha golpista de destruir los logros, las conquistas.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're listening to 101.3 FM or freakradio.org or possibly an archive show at huffsantacruz.org. It's Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. This twice weekly show, today running for 2 hours, covers current events, homeless civil rights struggles here in Santa Cruz, and whatever comes into my naughty head at the moment. This time we're going to be looking at the Santa Cruz shitty council meeting, and I'm intentionally being a little fecal about it, which happened on the 24th, 2 days ago. We'll be looking at protests 2 days before that on Pacific Avenue, rather low-key, mild tabling protests by myself and other Huff activists, including vendors like Shindig, who are going to be facing exclusion or criminalization from the Pacific Avenue downtown area on June 24th if they try to display their handmade jewelry, either for sale or donation, inside or outside the sacred blue boxes. Here we go.
Simply make me laugh. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Social significance, all other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. there's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with, perhaps the best way to introduce the city council's rather devastating, wretched, frightening city council session, frustrating, angering, all these words come to mind, is to go back to a protest activity or tabling activity that happened on the Sunday before, the 22nd of May, where Huff set up a table and began to try to round up signatures against the second reading of the ordinance. That's the final reading. Every ordinance in Santa Cruz has to go through two readings at the city council, which really means that essentially the staff creates a completed ordinance. The council ratifies it once, ratifies it twice, taps its fingers with impatience while attempting to put studious looks or attentive looks on their faces while people come and speak. Then they fundamentally ignore the public testimony, unless it's from a bunch of bigoted West Side neighbors who are concerned with ousting homeless people from their neighborhoods in RVs. That was a particular sore point for me on Tuesday, and I'm going to be playing more of that on Sunday. I'll be playing some actual, or intend to play anyway, some of the actual audio from City Council and give it a more thorough analysis. May also do that somewhat today, but first let's hear some voices from the street. The voices that City Council ignores, the voices that City Council are really going to silence, in the sense that if you silence the jewelers, if you remove the right to face paint on Pacific Avenue, and that was removed, the right to draw a painting on Pacific Avenue or a drawing, paint a painting or draw a drawing, if you remove the right to do some beading, which I haven't actually seen much of on Pacific Avenue, and then if you confine everything else to these reduced number of blue boxes, you're going to create a different kind of scene there, particularly if you highly regulate it by removing the first alarm thugs, as I call them, and the hospitality crowd, or hosts, as they call themselves, and instead substitute parks and rec rangers with ticketing powers and stay-away enforcement powers, you are going to create far more repressive a scene down there, or a far more frightened scene, or a far more vacant scene. Maybe it'll be a far more merchant-subsidized scene. It's hard to say. But that looks to be what's in the cards, because those two evil, I think they're evil, those two evil actions, I guess you would say, that happened at City Council got passed with nary a dissenting vote. I believe the entire, it was a second unanimous vote by the city council to essentially ban all kinds of traditional art activity, handicraft activity, vibrant activity on Pacific Avenue. This is something which ironically would have been shouted down even by the people who wanted to get rid of the homeless, and that's why the laws originally were created, the downtown ordinances, banning people from sitting down, peacefully spirit changing, and severely limiting places where you could perform and vend. But the limitations got more and more severe as these people who are the merchants or the aesthetic arbiters of Pacific Avenue were feeling their oaths more and more through staff members like Julie Hendy and Scott Collins, and council members like Lynn Robinson, Pamela Comstock, and Cynthia Matthews. But let's go back to some of the voices from the street and see what they have to say about issues that are coming up there.
It's around 15 to 2, and I'm down here on Pacific Avenue in front of the notorious Pacific Trading Company, talking to that man about typewriters,
Kevin Devane.
And Kevin, you have your briefcase with you. You have some rather archaic-looking satchel stand and goodness knows what else. And you've been out here for how long with this ancient royal typewriter?
today, just about 2 hours, just shy of that.
And so you are both beyond the 1 hour sacred limit and outside the blue boxes.
Nervous to be stating it publicly, but yes, that is the truth.
Have you been warned, hassled, or otherwise noticed on this issue?
Not as of yet.
Ever or just today?
Just today. I have been... I feel that I'm lucky in that I... How do I say this? I am just composed enough, I suppose, is perhaps the term I'm looking for.
You're a colorful part of the Pacific Avenue scene.
Yeah.
I mean, who ever heard of a man of a typewriter except Kevin in Santa Cruz?
You know, in New Orleans, I'm told this is quite common. So I've been asked... The only pushback I've received is I was... there have been a few times I've been asked to move on, and it's been cited that I was outside of the time limit.
But they never suddenly said, aha, no blue box. You're out of it, sir.
No, that did happen a couple times. That did happen a couple times, but only with hospitality was the only time.
And you were never actually given a $250 citation?
Not as of yet, no.
Well, let's keep hoping, because you aren't making a hell of a lot of money here.
Yeah, I think it also helps that I'm not making a hell of a lot of noise here, too. Like, the fact that, like, that's all you're going to hear, I think that gives me a little bit of leeway.
Low profile.
Yeah, exactly. Or low acoustic profile.
No complaints from the Pacific Trading Company.
Not as of yet. Not as of yet.
Well, here comes a man in blue. We'll see if... he continues on his way, or pauses to get a poem, perhaps.
You know, I've wondered, too, whether recently all the issues that other folks have been raising is going to draw attention to how outside the blue box I am. And I think that maybe some folks are starting to get annoyed with me for not getting as hassled as other folks are. But I'm just going to try to smile and make good art. That's my whole to-do list.
I like it.
Thank you.
And again, we've been talking with...
Kevin Devaney.
And Kevin, how can people find you online, and where will they find you down on Pacific Avenue?
Oh, great question. Thank you. You can find me on Instagram now at Kevin Devaney Poet, and you can find me on Etsy under Kevin Devaney. And you can find me out on Pacific Avenue on sunny days ending in the letter Y, usually somewhere between Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is my favorite, and Newly.
Outside the sacred blue boxes?
At times of defiance, yes.
Amazing. Well, I've never seen you in any other position than here outside the Pacific Trading Company, so you seem to be a perennial rebel.
I try to change it up every 2 to 3 hours. An hour is a bit restrictive for this whole rig that takes like 15, 20 minutes to pack up, break down. But I do think that performers and people who are doing their thing out here, artists, should be considerate of each other. I think that's important, that we build the kind of community we want to be a part of.
Will you be coming to the shitty council meeting on Tuesday?
What time is it on Tuesday?
Starts at 2:30.
I'm actually going to be battling an eviction on Tuesday, don't worry.
Well, good luck with the eviction.
And very few people did show up at that 2:30 city council meeting, although everyone who spoke, perhaps with one exception, maybe two, were extremely opposed to, if not very angry about, the proposed law. Kevin Devaney, who you can find particularly on weekends in front of the Pacific Trading Company, at least for the next month until it's made a crime. It actually is a crime right now, but they haven't been enforcing it against him because he's outside the sacred blue boxes. And while you're allowed to be inside a blue box and perform a service, well, that's an interesting question. He may actually be illegal on June 24th because the definitions that they allow are actually the definitions of everything they ban are very expansive. It's not only handicrafts or making handicrafts, but doing things like face painting, massaging, or creating a visual painting or drawing of any kind. I know that sounds really crazy, to me anyway. that you can't paint on Pacific Avenue or the side streets. That's inside or outside the blue boxes. You can't give a massage. And that has nothing to do whether you get money for it or not. Just doing it as an action is now a crime. A $250 crime if the fine is similar to what the a prior fine was for violating the blue boxes and the so-called move-along law. The move-along law for Kevin, he's already said it's difficult for him because he takes a considerable amount of time to set up his display. That's true particularly for artists who have displays and also for people who have handicrafts, which will be, of course, entirely banned. Will it be banned for him to create with a typewriter on Pacific Avenue? He's creating his own work. It's not going to be, it's not illegal for him to sell or even put a price tag on or display his own work for sale. Can he create a work that's not finished? He can't do it if it's visual. Can he do it if it's not visual? Well, it's not a permitted performance. So let me brood on this for a moment and consult some of the upcoming rules. So the rules of Ordinance 2016-07, which I'm now looking at, which was passed unanimously twice by the progressive or moderate dumb, blind, and deaf city council. I'm not quite sure what phrases are best applied to them. Specifically, however, performances which are allowed are the act of engaging in playing musical instruments, singing, dancing, acting, pantomiming, puppeteering, juggling, reciting, engaging in music, creating visual art in its entirety, presenting or enacting a play, work of music, physical or mental feat. And here is where there may be an in for Kevin, or other constitutionally protected entertainment or form of expression. He's clearly enacting a form of expression. However, the term performances shall not include, and according to Scott Collins, whose name I believe is at the bottom of this ordinance, I think it was at the bottom of the staff report on this ordinance, but it's not at the bottom of the actual ordinance itself. It shall not include, I can scroll back to that section, application of substances to others' bodies, including but not limited to paints, dyes, and inks. So no tattooing, no face painting. The provision of personal services such as massage or hair weaving, cutting, or styling. And here's the one that really is strange. The completion or partial creation of visual art. Now, writing a poem, which is what Kevin does in these very tiny, kind of cute little, I don't know, 2-inch by 2-inch books or 2-inch by 1-inch or very small, which he sells for $10 or so down there. He'll actually create you a poem on the spot. That's what Kevin does. So that's not specifically banned, but it's let's put it this way, it's not specifically included in the list of things that are banned. The creation of visual art, which is mass-produced, is banned. It's also visual art produced with limited variation is banned. Does that mean that prints of a person's own art are banned because they aren't the original? Interesting question, and I guess we'll find out what the police want to do about that, and whether how much crackdown the judges are going to be able to go along with. So far, they've gone along with almost everything. There was a decision last August that the artists outside the blue boxes, two of them, Alex and Joff, who you can still find on Pacific Avenue and are still outside the blue boxes and are still refusing to move every hour, and insist they will continue to do that after June 24th, and good for them, that they were found not guilty, but not because the law itself is unconstitutional. It was unclear why they were not found guilty. I couldn't really get a clear story from Alex or Joff. Alex is very secretive about this stuff. He's afraid his defenses will be exposed to the prosecution. Even though the prosecution was in the courtroom and had police witnesses trying to convict him unsuccessfully. But generally speaking, Kim Baskett, who apparently was the commissioner who's hearing the case. You don't get a jury trial in any of these cases, by the way, folks. You get seen before a judge. You don't get an attorney appointed for you either. And usually you end up with a hefty fine or a somewhat reduced fine if the judge wants to appear to be mellow or perhaps is in a mellow mood. I say judge, but actually it's a commissioner, and it's a horrible commissioner. I call her Basement Level Basket. Kim Basket is her name, and she is notorious, at least in my book, in cases I've seen her deal with, and her dealings with individual people, even in the audience, is she acts like she's in a courtroom. She is in a courtroom. She acts like she's in a royal court and has sort of summary powers with the bailiff to order people around in the most cursory and high-handed manner. And you know, I remember once coming into the court, and I got up to leave to go outside and I think make a phone call or consult the law library. And she demanded to know why I was coming and going. And I think at the point she was saying that, I'd come and gone once and come back in. And then this was the second time I was leaving. I was sitting in the front row, but I wasn't disturbing people as I left. But she apparently took real umbrage. Or maybe was just trying to make it very uncomfortable for me in the court, or just was expressing hostility. Or maybe she was having some kind of a psychological or medical problem herself in terms of not being able to really focus on the court. But it's not appropriate to blame people in the audience who are there to observe and who have the right to come and go, as long as they do so quietly, which is what I was doing. All of these different performances that I've mentioned, everything's banned, including, and this is the main point, not just the sale of or display of for sale any kind of handicrafts, any kind of jewelry, scarves, articles of clothing, hats, food that you've made, stuffed animals, glass and metal pipes, vaping devices, rocks, geodes, crystals, perfume, incense, oils, anything that has a common and dominant non-expressive purpose. That is to say, something that has more than nominal utility apart from its communication. These $5 words are their way of trying to say, oh, we're not really judging art, we're judging whether it has a nominal utility apart from its communication. If it doesn't communicate and does something more than that primarily, then it can be banned and is banned from Pacific Avenue, the blue boxes, and outside the blue boxes, and on all the side streets where there are no blue boxes. I think there's one blue box on Cooper Street right around the corner from Pacific Avenue. But elsewise, there's no First Amendment activity involving a display device and no performances at all, in the sense that you can't engage in any kind of activity that is not specifically a constitutionally protected entertainment or form of expression, which isn't defined. And all those things that are banned are very specifically verboten. Kevin is a friendly guy, a real part of the scene, and an individual who will be illegal in the spot he's in now, and perhaps illegal in the blue box, or else vying with the blue box and having to try to move every hour. And not only will he have to move every hour, as is the current law, currently you have to be warned after an hour by somebody who says, you set up this display device and you have to move it. And then if you don't move, you get a ticket. Now, whether you are warned or not, you can't. There's no more requirement for warning. You will simply be told at 61 minutes you got a ticket, if that's what the cop chooses to do. And you might say, "Well, we got nice cops; they'll be reasonable," and they might, you know, depending on their load and whether they like your looks and whether they've had problems with you in the past or feel that you're the kind of person they don't think fits in on Pacific Avenue. But the fact is that giving them this kind of selective enforcement power, which really is what all these ordinances are about, since it's they're really going to try to enforce these ordinances rigidly, and maybe they will, because they are bringing in, they say, Parks and Rec at what's going to cost them more, and this is going to be There are going to be many more citations written, I believe, because of this. I could be wrong. People may flee in droves from Pacific Avenue and the side streets, other than those who are coming to walk their poodles and buy knickknacks in the shops, or avail themselves of the restaurants and the sidewalk cafes they're now taking up, if you add all the other things, excluding everybody who wants to sit down, let's say, on the sidewalk somewhere, maybe because the benches are full, or maybe because there's a number of folks and they're kind of associating together on the sidewalk, which is what happens in downtown Santa Cruz at different points. Less than 1% of the sidewalk is available for that purpose. A smaller amount than was the case 2 years ago when they were very repressive ordinances by Comstock and Robinson, then the mayor, Lynn Robinson, were passed, because you are not going to be allowed to sit on the ground inside blue boxes, even if they are 14 feet from a bench, 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from a kiosk, 14 feet from a phone booth, 14 feet, 50 feet from an ATM machine, 50 feet from a bank. Even if you are able to meet all those requirements, which are still in place for anybody who is peacefully spare changing or sitting, and not, unless they're sitting on their own chair inside a blue box doing a permitted activity. It's all becoming very well organized for all you folks who like to see things neat and uncluttered. So maybe that's what some folks want. It is clearly what some folks want. I don't think it's what most of us want, and I certainly isn't what I want, I can tell you that. Let's hear some more from Kevin.
Any comments about that?
Not as of yet, but check that later.
Are you refusing to pay rent, or are you being ousted?
It's not a short story.
I'll be back to get all the details. Thank you. We're talking with
Kevin Devaney.
Thanks, Kevin. And you, sir, you've been pondering the situation. Are you any comments on the upcoming Vanish the Vendors ordinance, which is coming up?
Well, the. It would be nice to get clear of our ordinance of any kind. So we have a vendor here, both sides of the street, who has to pay an immense amount of rent for selling those
loud honkers too, I might add.
Yeah. Also, but when it comes to vendors, sometimes the vendors who are not paying rent are a little bit violent in the way they do things.
Have you noticed that today?
Yes.
What happened? Tell me about that.
Well, that's I'm more of a perception of a person who is very clear about life. And most people are not clear about life and how about human expression.
But you sort of notice that you have no one's come up and started trying to shake you down or threaten you.
Not like that, but that's not necessary. There are subtle ways to intimidate people. They're not necessarily
have to be physically violent.
Physical violence. How do you in the United States are very expert.
Well, how do you notice that today? Anything you could describe for us that would show?
Well, anytime I stop, not anytime, but I stop two times to say hi to the player, and the player say, "Move on, no today."
Really?
Yeah. So,
but the players or the vendors?
The players and the vendors the same, and they are outside the jurisdiction of the Santa Cruz changing policies and playing games. You know, like you have people who pays higher rent and they want to sell their goods. This is capitalism with its base on exploitation.
So you favor getting rid of these vendors, you think? Or?
And it's more complex than just a question of getting ready. It's more of educating people in who they are as a human being.
You're taking a more profound approach.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I will talk to you more, but I have to set up the table I've been talking with. If you want to say.
I think it's about that.
Thank you very much. And we'll be on Free Radio Thursday evening. I'll give you the card if you want to listen to your thoughts come back at you again.
Okay.
Thank you.
About creation. Okay, good. Yeah. It's on my wall. It's right next to my workstation. Yeah, good. Good.
That's Ryan Harvey, Gentrification. We'll be hearing more from her. And you can find her online, too, on YouTube. Number of songs, some of which we're going to hear today. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the recorded version. We're still moving into our new mini studio very slowly. Some of our key people who are going to be doing the technical work of putting in the equipment and making sure the studio is usable are out of town, so we can't really do that for a bit. But we are still broadcasting. People have asked me, aren't you off the air? And the answer is no. We've been on the air continuously for, gosh, at least a year. We had to go off the air for a while because we were afraid our transmitter site was about to be foreclosed on. And that is about to happen again, and we're afraid of that. That will put us off the air unless you, the listeners, find us a place. It doesn't have to be a building. It doesn't have to be an indoors place. A tree will do if we can get, run a line from a building for electricity and internet. And it's what we've always done for free radio for the last 21 years when we've been on the air. But we need it again. And we are, I guess July is our deadline this time. I feel like I'm kind of cry wolf a lot on this because I'm not really directly involved. The banks apparently have allowed our benefactor, who's allowed us to stay in our current transmitter site month after month, year after year, in spite of threats of foreclosure. But this time, apparently, well, this is what we heard actually on previous occasions, but this time it looks really serious, and I can only pass on what I've been told. So give a call to 423-4833 if you want to help search for a transmitter site. We do table at the farmer's market, usually, or I have in the past tabled with the Food Not Bombs table. Sometimes we go there. We need help if you want this station to continue, and I hope you do, because I like talking on the air, or at least I seem to keep doing it, whether I like it or not. Let's go back to Pacific Avenue. These are interviews from the time we were tabling on Sunday, this last Sunday, the 22nd of May, and I will be interrupting with my usual commentary. If you have any thoughts, by the way, and you want to bring them up, questions, challenges to any facts, or you wish to be on the air on a subject that you feel is related to the kind of stuff we're talking to but isn't being properly covered, please call that same number, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is also a number for the civil rights organization HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Here, in front of Forever 21, I see two Santa Cruz police officers and one first alarm security thug. Hey, man. So what's going on here?
They're basically doing a on-the-spot investigation for potential credit card fraud. Yeah.
So this guy was identified by someone else, or they're just...
The stores were concerned because he had a lot of credit cards.
Coincidence, probably.
Oh, absolutely. Total coincidence that those are his credit cards. He has a passport with his name. The person was trying to buy some things that he...
bags are being searched. Did he give his permission for that?
He gave permission.
That's his first mistake.
Yeah.
So it's up. So when do you...
Basically, what's going on is the... He's passed muster. He's passed the test. The cops gave him his backpack. They seem to have found no issue, and all the credit cards appear to belong to him, as well as his passport, which he was using to identify himself with.
Are they cautioning the store to stop making questionable or fraudulent reports?
I hope so. But I was curious myself, because the person was ordering a lot of stuff. Now they have their ID. Cool, that's working out.
And what's your name, sir?
My name is James.
And you are?
Orion, Stephen Bard.
And what happened here, Stephen?
Well, I got stopped by the police for reasons I actually don't know, because I don't really do police at all. I am a totally pure person, so I don't have a presence there at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know, actually, and I'd be happy for any help. that could be offered in any way.
I know you're more cooperative than I would be in terms of letting them search your stuff.
I don't have anything to hide, really. I mean,
privacy is your own right.
It's a right, but as a Christian being, I carry rights for myself and a few other people in my life. So, you know, I share rights in that sense without having to necessarily need to.
You don't use them, you lose them, is how I look at it.
And this is a dispute that I often have with folks who are, I think, under the misimpression that cooperating with guys with badges and gals with badges and guns and the assertion of authority against you is an appropriate voluntary choice when it involves your right to be free from your person from search and seizure unless there's a warrant specifying specifically the article sought and the places to be searched. That's the Fourth Amendment. And you say, oh, you're pulling the Constitution. Don't you want to stop crime? Well, to me, I don't want to have stuff stolen from me. And actually, I haven't recently. I mean, I thought I lost a jacket on Pacific Avenue about a week and a half ago, but who should bring it back to me? But Sam, the tie-dye shirt man who turned out had left it next to his stand on the bike rack. And, of course, immediately jumped to the conclusion that it was stolen or taken because, I don't know, I'm a naturally paranoid kind of guy, perhaps, or maybe we're trained that way, some of us. It's a fear. And then there is a lot of theft going on particularly between poor people. It's like you crowd everybody into a cage and they start, you know, nipping and snapping and biting at each other and taking blankets from each other, and particularly with drugs and self-medication. People have to buy drugs illegally and at a costly price. It's a nasty, wretched situation, which is not really addressed, I continue to assert, by punitive police measures. And we're beginning to hear this even from authorities, that in San Francisco they're talking about injection centers like they have in Vancouver, where people can go and take their hard drugs off the street in a safer environment, and it helps them deal with the issue. It also enables them, for sure. And it also helps those who would be faced with theft or would be faced with having to, you know, deal with, you know, discarded needles in the neighborhood, unsafe discarded needles, which is, you know, still a big rallying cry in Santa Cruz. The Sentinel periodically blasts the figures of Take Back Santa Cruz about needle mania, as I call it, instead of trying to deal with the issue through drug decriminalization, which you never hear the Take Back Santa Cruz mob talk about. So, here's some more of this stop which the police made, and you might say it was legitimate. I mean, certainly no one was abused, in the sense no one was physically abused. But it's difficult when the police are saying, you know, can I look in here? And you say, no, I'd rather not, you know, officer. You have to really train yourself to be able to make those kinds of statements. And you should. I mean, police are trained to have a certain rap to get you to essentially surrender rights you have in order to assist them in their criminal investigations, which involves treating every innocent person as a potential criminal. And this may be something that's necessary for police work in a way, but it's not necessary that we all become policemen and policewomen over ourselves and treat ourselves as guilty, potentially guilty, and feel the need to abandon our privacy, whether it's to the NSA, the National Security Agency, or to the Santa Cruz Police Department. And I'll be having more to say about the need for reforms in the police department and the successful attack on the Santa Cruz Police Department's murderous behavior in shooting three unarmed people. Or what is it? One guy was armed with a butter knife. and the subsequent resignation of Chief Sir, which I went into at some length in the last show. I'll be talking a bit about some of the related issues around that after we finish listening to this bit of tape. So let's hear it.
I will always have my rights in any way, of course, you know. but I don't necessarily need to force them on anybody.
No, I think you're forcing them. I think you're telling them, unless you have some reason to, you know, to arrest me, I will be on my way, or whatever.
Well, and actually, if you want to know why I hide something, it's the summer, and I will in fact chop them if I have to, but I definitely won't have to.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So, what I hear from this...
Before we hear more, I want to apologize. The whooshing in the background was an extremely strong wind that was occasionally blowing stuff all over the sidewalk, including our literature at the Huff table. So that's why whoosh is such a pain in the ass.
This cooler man who's next to you is that the police apparently thought you were engaged in credit card fraud because of some claim by a merchant.
Claim, but I don't really believe it. I believe that all claims are really a fraud at some level. Because they're going to have a claim on another charge. I didn't think that
way. How long were the police holding there?
I believe it was about, let's say, 12
years. How long have you been in Santa Cruz yourself?
I've been here 3-4 years now.
What do you think of the town?
I love Santa Cruz. It's such an awesome place, and I really don't mind at all, in a sense, but I do not like being stopped. And I don't believe in being stopped, and I believe that's why California is such a fair place, that we have this thing called the traffic stop. And I do believe that the police basically respect that as long as people are respectful of that traffic stop, and that it's a very nice thing to have.
Have you been stopped before by police?
I have a few times, yeah.
Have you been later?
No.
This is another myth. If only I respect the police and I'm nice to them, they'll be nice to me. What you do has very little relation to what the police do. They have their own priorities, in my view, and in my experience, I should say. And ironically, if you are a person who's known to assert your rights to the police, at least in Santa Cruz, I think they tend to respect you more rather than if you're all set to surrender everything you got to them if they ask you to. You surrender your ability to have them out of your backpack, have their noses out of your car. If you are going to say, I have nothing to hide, so strip me naked and look me over, as though that were some sort of cooperation. But also the notion if you have a friendly attitude, you're going to be left alone. It could be true. I mean, I'm not saying you should have an unfriendly attitude, although, frankly, I have a very unfriendly attitude towards massive over-policing that's happening in Santa Cruz, and I think it's a positive thing that I do have an unfriendly attitude toward that, but not toward people generally, and frankly, not really toward the individual officers when I actually am relating to them. But insofar as they are a part of a machine, insofar as their function seems to be to be the enforcement arm of the merchants downtown, as is often the case on Pacific Avenue, they're not really checking for rape or violence or assaults. They're checking to enforce absurd ordinances. And sometimes the police rebel. And I'll probably be talking about that in greater length on Sunday. It happened to me in a very reassuring, well, reassuring isn't quite the word. I didn't feel reassured. I felt gratified, that's the right word, at City Council. And I'll be talking about that as well as Officer Sir, I should say, Police Chief Sir of San Francisco and his resignation. Or I should say, the Santa Cruz, San Francisco and Santa Cruz police departments, and what really needs to be addressed, not the media's focus on the big names, which I am also kind of prone to focus on, like Chief Greg Sir. No, sir. And now we have no, sir.
I'm able to stay out of the way better because, you know, it's a challenging thing to be born here as any kind of being, and we all have such an amazing ability to just be here in my travels. And he with his share, and it's getting very clear, I believe, but it's been a long time, you know. We have been talking with my uncle's name is Philip Hawes. My mom's name is Anna Del Hermes Hawes.
I'd like to know your great grandparents' names as well.
My grandmother's name is Miriam, and her
not far enough back.
Yeah, I know.
Alright, we'll let that go, but I want the full name, middle initial, and so
I definitely want to give that to you. I have a family tree. I'm a little bit of a family tree, but
you rush home and get it, is what I say.
Well, I'm going to rush as fast as I can. I do have a lot on my mind, and I'm
and I think
actually
we should
healing as
ignore
well.
Everything I just said.
I don't want to ignore anything because I actually believe in that when I overshare myself, I do know that I'm oversharing, but I don't judge myself.
No problem.
Yeah, so thank you very much.
This will be on free radio on Thursday.
So thank you, sir. Thank you for interviewing me.
And thank you for
such a blessing
for letting me know what's going on Pacific Avenue.
So much. Gavin, my name is...
I'm Robert.
Robert.
It's on the card, too.
It's Ryan Stevenfeld card.
It's like
Robert.
Right.
Wait.
Oh, I noticed that you're seeing this web.
Yeah, I'm going to see this down here.
Oh, okay. The music of Valerie Christie.
There ain't no reason why
this is the Huff Table. It's a very windy day, mostly in the blues. It's a coffee by Starbucks, purchased by Zav, who is advising people to fight the attack on vendors, and I'm not sure how successful he is. How do we?
Well, the Tuesday one,
and Valerie here is doing playing some guitar. She's got Mama Don't Allow No Vendin around here. She's been playing Homeless with Downtown, Homeless Lyric, and a few other numbers as well, in spite of the chilly weather. What do you think, Valerie?
I think it's really sucks, man.
The singing is bad.
So what city what?
The singing.
The singing. Well, I don't know. It's up to other people whether it sucks, but people have not told me it sucks, so that's good.
I think it's good.
You know, Mama, the city don't allow no vending around here.
Mama don't allow no vending.
No, Mama don't allow no vending around here.
The city says no vending.
If you ain't got lots of money, it's not joking, it's not funny. They don't allow no vending around here.
No jewelry sales in Santa Cruz.
They don't allow no hanging around here.
We don't want them poor people selling jewelry.
They don't allow no hanging around here.
The city council's going to just say no to that.
We don't care what they don't allow. We're going to hang out anyhow.
And no hanging out neither.
Man, that sucks.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah,
no dogs are allowed in the cage.
No dogs.
No cats or rabbits. In fact, no animals of any kind.
Yeah.
And that's another part of the new ordinance, that if you have a display device, you cannot have a pet with you, an animal of any kind, maybe a pet cockroach if it's hidden well. One has a sense that we have cockroaches running the city in a certain sense. It was already illegal to have a dog as a panhandler, but Rochelle Narayan and I guess, was it Cynthia Matthews or Pamela Comstock, I'm not sure, expressed great concern for a kitty that was a companion to a panhandler who used to hang out right across from the kiosk next to the New Leaf, right across on the other side of Pacific Avenue. And he was harassed and run off by the police who came, but with, frankly, great courage, he came back and apparently, I'm not aware that he was cited or that the citations, if they were given to him, were ever carried to court. That has been an issue for the last 9 months, and that there hasn't been either a lot of ticketing, or if there were tickets, I haven't got a really clear documented response to how frequently tickets are actually maybe given but don't go to court because the officers, the tickets aren't forwarded to court. I would say it's my understanding that most infraction tickets, and that's everything that you would normally get a citation for that doesn't involve a theft or violence or some kind of white-collar crime. In other words, if you're sitting on the sidewalk, if you're biking the wrong way, if you're sleeping at night after 11, anywhere, if you're a homeless person outside, if you're at City Hall with a protest sign after 10 o'clock at night on the so-called City Hall courtyard area, all these things are infractions. And it's not really clear. I think most of them are regularly forwarded to the courts, and then when they show up on the court docket, it's usually several months late. They'll say to you in the infraction ticket, you must reply within 30 days, and that is, so you must come down to the court and either give them a big chunk of cash to avoid going to court through giving the money to the clerks, or you must make a court date. But usually people will find when they get down there, their tickets aren't on the docket. Their tickets aren't in the computers. And according to the women behind the windows, I think they're all women, that I've seen so far, at least recently, in the Superior Court clerk area, there is a 2-month delay before the site, before they get there's a 2-month backup. So we still aren't going to know what's happened with Alex and Joff, the two artists who were actually not just cited for being outside the sacred blue boxes twice, cited, but also arrested, handcuffed, and taken to jail for that, held there for many hours, and finally released with presumably with a court date. But there's no indication in the computer of their having any court appearances, so apparently, even though a court date was issued on their citation, and this has happened to me, for an infraction ticket. You're not supposed to be jailed for an infraction. So the idea of the police falsely arresting these people and jailing them is another example of their attempt to assert authority, to put people in fear, to say, see, we can do this to you, and everybody who's watching. We can take away your liberty if you don't do everything we say, regardless of whether it's constitutional or legal. And we're going to take it eventually to the judge. If you want to spend a lot of time and money hoping that a judge will believe your story over the cops, well, good luck, buddy. Otherwise, keep your head down, shut up, and do what we say. That's the grim and evil lesson that police authority often produces. If the police were there to be helpful in resolving certain issues, and sometimes they are, I've had cars that were stolen from me, God knows why, my cars really suck, returned by the police. Not always in the best of shape, but many times they found my car. I think it was 3 or 4 times that's happened. And as I often say, every time that happens, I write a letter saying thank you very much, appreciate your naming the particular officers involved, thanking them, and also suggesting that that's the kind of job I like to see the police department do. Find my car. Right on. But no, don't go after people who are tired and sit down on the sidewalk, you know, but are not blocking the sidewalk or causing any trouble. And yet, the Parks and Rec Rangers and the police are going to be put in this position where they are both the tools of bigoted or privileged people who feel that they have the right to control a street scene according to their own aesthetic. That's often the merchants who like to blame the economic climate on poor people outside, whether it's homeless people who are lingering near their shops, or whether it's merchants who think the vendors are taking away their business, and how come they can do their vending and we have to pay such exorbitant rents? Well, you generally don't have to look for a place to sleep every night because many of these vendors are homeless or sleep in their vehicles. You want to try that? You want to change places with them? See how that works for you. Or possibly like things that are happening up to MH, up at MH Can, the well-regarded sort of respite place and therapy place and mutual communication and association and caring place where people with mental health diagnoses go, and some of them are homeless and some of them are not, up near Cayuga and Soquel. They are being attacked because the combination of paranoid bigots, and I like to use that phrase because I think that's what they are. Although, in all candor, I haven't examined the research stats in their community, but I haven't seen them publicly presented either. In collusion with the police, some eager beaver create more laws. Maybe they just want more jobs, or maybe they just kind of share this sense that we don't want poor people in our neighborhoods. They make us nervous. We think they're criminals, or they could be criminals. Or what are they doing sleeping in their cars? They're going to take our bikes. You know, our children are here. They're going to go after our, you know, this is the kind of mounting hysteria that even some friends and relatives of friends of mine have fallen into. Anyway, it ain't a good thing, and we have to fight it, and we have to stand up to it. And I think the best way to do that, as I was suggesting yesterday at our weekly HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, is to document it. Carry a video device with you. Many people have these now because they're part of their cell phones. And start taking pictures. Start making comments about the names of the officers involved, the names of people that are involved. The people who are in the neighborhood near MH Can are reportedly photographing clients of MH Can, or just poor people in the neighborhood who are hanging out there and are using the streets and sidewalks there. And trying to use this as a form of intimidation eventually to attack MH Can as being some sort of crime draw. This is the same kind of mentality that was falsely ascribed to cannabis dispensaries. And actually, ironically, cannabis dispensaries aren't a magnet for a crime or even for poverty, because cannabis is expensive. It's not something that poor people can afford. But that's another issue. And again, regarding MH Can, we see a kind of a dangerous repressive mentality spreading to even the best of people. I saw it in the Red Church, where Father Joel Miller first kicked Renee Curry out of her program, which was where she had a youth program around the Red Church, which is downtown next to across from Jack's Hamburgers and Cynthia Matthews' historic house, which she owns next to it, and the Nickelodeon, and suddenly limited Renee Curry's work as the gardener and also person working with the youth program to one day a week for the Red Church's Monday meal. Then the Monday meal, people were told they could no longer be on the grass out there prior to the meal, because and the rest of the week it was also discouraged or forbidden to be on the grass at one of the largest green areas in downtown Santa Cruz. And then suddenly you had to have, more recently, they were giving out little tickets because they felt they were under increasing pressure, apparently. So because of the people hanging out there one day a week, Monday, at night, I think 2 days, there was a second meal as well. They cut back the second meal, and they also said you couldn't come to the first meal if there were more than 70 people there, and you had to get a little red ticket to get in. The latest thing I've heard they're doing there is they're not allowing people to take their food out of the building. Because, I don't know, is that unsightly to eat a plate of food on the street? Does it make middle-class people nervous to know that some people are hungry and are eating essentially charity donations? You tell me. Similarly, MH Can has been accused by different folks, two at least, who either reported to me directly or came to the HUF meeting, who are concerned that the administration is banning them for 3 months from programs if they linger near the building, not on private property, but on public property. And private organizations, this is something that the Homeless Lack of Services Center did too, two or three years ago. They, these are reports from the two clients or witnesses that came to the HUF meeting or talked to me personally. And I put this issue to the administration, at least one of the people in the administration of the MH Can, and I was told that they don't have any rules against being within two or three blocks of MH Can, but they're concerned because the neighbors and the police, and I don't know if this is what they're saying, but this is what I'm hearing from a variety of sources, are gathering evidence to try to pull off their permits, restrict their hours that they've already done, cut down the number of people who are allowed to be there, maybe close down the entire place entirely. And this is something that a lot of people who really respect, myself included, MH Can's work, are really worried about. But if the response is to create a situation like The homeless lack of services center putting up a gate. The homeless lack of services center now requiring ID cards. The homeless lack of services center cutting off all or most day services like the meals to people generally and only allowing those who are in their programs to come in. It began small. It began with the low-impact zones or the no-impact zones that they created a couple years ago there and said, even on the public sidewalk, we won't let you be there or we'll kick you out of our program or suspend you from our program. This kind of repressive class war, this kind of attack on poor people is so contemptible and pisses me off so much that I really don't know what to do when otherwise, good organizations start doing it. And so I try to, you know, I'm fuddling around in the middle. I'm saying, well, you know, we want to protect good organizations like MHCAN, but we also want to make sure that they don't adopt repressive policies such as are happening elsewhere. And that, it's a real quandary for people like myself who believe, you know, that A, it's not effective to adopt those kinds of policies, however much the temptation is, and B, it hurts people who are supposed to help. Anyway, let's get musical, and I'll come back. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org.
Abandoned houses, let them rot. Security cameras, lock them up. Raise the rent, create the slum. Waterfront condos, here they come. Rats in the alley, let it rot. Bars on the park fence, lock them up. Empty storefront, create the slum. Luxury apartments, here they come.
Was Create the Slums by Ryan Harvey.
It's going to be a new part of the law. Now, so what do you think of this law, sir? I see you've got a tough sip of coffee. What do you think of what? This is upcoming law that will ban all jewelry vending, scarf.
I've got a lot to say about it. I'm planning on going down on Tuesday. I'm a professional musician, and when I moved down here in 2012, I had the idea of maybe busking down here. But I was really turned away. As a professional musician, I was turned away from ever coming down here.
Tell me how that happened.
Well, because of all the rules. If you try to follow the rules, it's insane. It really is really more than it's reasonable, I mean, to really come down here. And it seems to me that the people that are following the rules, or at least trying to, are the ones that are getting ticketed. Because if you're batshit crazy around here acting out, they won't mess with you because they don't know how to deal with you. But if they see that you've got some sense in your mind, and you're trying to follow the rules, well, those type of people we can mess with.
And you might have some money, too.
And you might have, exactly. You might have some money. That's exactly what they target. It's ridiculous. So here's an example of myself, of a professional musician that was discouraged because of all the crap and because of all the interference from cops and all the legislation that just makes it tougher, not easier. And what do you do? You're going to allow you're going to allow the gap in Forever 21, that eyesore, you're going to allow that kitsch to come in, but you're not going to allow this? It's out of your mind.
Well, yeah. We're competition for the gap. We could drive them out of business.
Well, I doubt it, but even if you could, would you really blame vendors on that? That would be nice.
The gap is paying a decent or an indecent rent to the appropriate landlords here, and we get a cut of that in taxes to pay the bureaucrats to come out and enforce these ordinances.
God, they're getting their money. They're getting their money, so what's the problem, man? You guys are obviously making it, okay? So, as long as you're not tripping people up, or creating
that... The merchants are complaining, sir. We have to address that
issue. Merchants are complaining. Wow, they are? Are they really? Oh, well, can I cuss?
No, you fucking can't, sir.
Well, fuck them. Are you kidding me? You're not making enough money all over the world here? And then down here, creating an eyesore? We don't need you here.
It's all your fault. The sugar just fell over.
And at this point, we started scrambling to pick up stuff that the wind had blown away. I'm going to have another musical break, because I like these musical breaks. Here's another one by Ryan Harvey. That was Ryan Harvey, the Worthington Deportations. And there's no more information about that on YouTube, but it sounds like ICE, the successor to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, is at it again. Or at least that could be what Ryan is referring to. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. Let's go back to interviews on the street from last Sunday, where a number of us were rounding up signatures against the Vanish the Vendors law in very windy weather, I might say. And we endured. Let's hear more of what we endured.
Who did that interview we've been talking with?
Michael Covell, professional pianist of over 20 years.
So have you actually brought the piano down here or tried to play it?
I wouldn't dare. I just wouldn't dare. It's enough trouble to bring a piano down here and power it up. And then
and every hour you must be moving along.
That would be too hard for me to do. I couldn't do it. Plus, even though it's not louder than any instrument, I think I have to get an amplification permit, which I think is about 30, 37 bucks a day, which just wouldn't be worth it for me.
Well, you don't have to get an amplified sound permit technically unless you actually are using an amplifier of some kind.
Yep.
However, they could claim...
No, I have to for my keyboards because the keyboards don't have an internal speaker. Technically, I would have to go through an amp, even though it wouldn't be louder than anything else.
Now, have you played the piano of this kind in other cities?
Yes.
And have you had to get an amplified sound permit?
If you go to San Francisco, you do. It's more hassle than it's worth.
What does Santa Cruz compare with San Francisco?
You have to jump through the same hoops, so you're going to make better money in San Francisco, so you might as well go up there if you're going to do it. So, yeah, it's just as much hassle, but at least you're probably going to make out a little better, so... harder to get into, though. It's a lot more work, but and some people claim to be cool. You never know. So you want to play by the rules so that you don't get hassled. Sick of hassled anyway, so it doesn't matter.
You played it, you want to speak up?
Boise, Seattle, and Boise, Seattle were, in my opinion, better. But Seattle, however, it's kind of hard. A lot of rain days, so the weather keeps you from there. But didn't get hassled there. Didn't get hassled in Boise either.
Well, thank you, Mike, and we expect to see you at City Council bringing your piano in to serenade the council.
I would like to bring my elephants, but I'll bring myself for sure. I'll come down and talk.
Just don't try any beating, jeweling, stitching, or weaving on the streets after June 24th.
Oh, after June 24th? Okay.
Well, that's if they pass it on May 24th, Tuesday, the day after tomorrow.
Oh, I really hope they don't. It's a really bad idea.
Don't hope too hard, because it's a done deal. They unanimously voted it in 2 weeks ago. Just a formal second reading, but it's good to hear.
You could still reverse it.
Okay.
Well, hopefully, if enough people come down and talk about it, you know, they might reconsider. And if I can't persuade them as a professional musician why this is a bad idea, then they've already had their mindset.
I've heard about 35% of what you said, but I'm deeply distracted because of the wind, the streets, and who knows what else. Probably too sleepy after all. I should be in bed anyway. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, hang out if you want.
Yeah, well.
And I don't think Mike made it to the council meeting. Very few did, and I can understand it. It's a kind of a hapless, hopeless situation, thankless as well. Often the only time, the only way we get people to go is if we organize and, you know, maybe have even food there and so forth. Though the city is doing its best to make it more difficult to assemble groups of people at City Hall. So they put up taping that masks off the majority of space near the City Council chambers. You can't use it, although no one is using it. The idea that is somehow an appropriate thing to do, I think I may be challenging that shortly, because I think, well, I said I was going to talk about this, so I guess I should. I was encouraged at City Council by the, how would I describe it? You who listen regularly to the show have heard me talk about how the City Council implemented new rules that make it illegal to, or I should say illegal, but a violation of their rules to put your, if you're a reporter or even just an ordinary person who wants to record what they're doing, your device near the speaker's podium, or actually anywhere in the room unless you're sitting next to it. And I guess sitting a foot and a half away from it in the front row is not count as next to it, because many is the time Sergeant Bush has come up to me and tried to confiscate the recorder and warn me that if I left it there, even though I was sitting 2 feet away from it, that was unattended. Essentially, he was being directed by the city administrator, Bren Lehrer, who kind of implemented this crackdown beginning in the term of Lynn Robinson. I think, you know, is she a closet member of Take Back Santa Cruz? Who knows? She seems to be behaving in a very repressive manner towards, at least towards me, and that's, of course, what I kind of noticed, because I have had many dealings with Bren. And she also is helpful at other times and other matters, but she's led the charge on the issue of so-called decorum at city council, where decorum in this case means attacking a reporter, because that's what I'm doing right now, I'm reporting to you, who tries to get his own account of what's going on at City Hall. Anyway, what happened on Tuesday was interesting. People were rather upset at the city's, I believe it was unanimous passage of the anti-vendor law, and also the anti-performer law, and also really the anti-public law and the anti-street culture law, and in its origins and its impact, the anti-homeless law. And so I got pissed, and I normally get tired of sitting in the front row. So what I normally have to do is when Sergeant Bush is standing there, and he wasn't there, he was another officer there, he will come over, although usually it's only after he's, more recently it's been, it was only after he's been prompted by the city administrator to get that man and his machine away from him and stop him from doing that recording. He comes over and moves to take my machine. I swoop in, grab it before he does, and hold on to it. He then walks back to his post at the side of the room. I then go back and put it up again. He rushes over. I pull it away. And he so far has not had me arrested other than on one occasion 2.5 years ago. Well, 2 years ago, I guess it was, when I guess it was Lynn Robinson was mayor. And she filled out a citizen's arrest against me because I kept putting the tape recorder and that kind of, at that point it was a tape recorder and not an audio device, up there. And I was taken out of the council. I wasn't taken to jail. I was given a citation, and the district attorney never filed charges because it's what I was accused of doing, and that their pretext for harassing people is you are disrupting the meeting. But putting a small audio device in a place where it's been placed for the last 25 years, relatively inconspicuous, is not disrupting a meeting. And therefore, the DA won't file a charge on that. And if the city council continues to arrest people for it, that certainly begins to look like intentional false arrest or false reports to the police department regarding supposed violations of the law, because if it's Lynn Robinson, who filed this citation against me, who claims I'm disrupting a meeting when all I'm doing is putting a tape recorder in a prominent spot where it can actually record what's going on and provide a citizen or, you know, a member of the community with her own recording, you have a right to do that under the Public Meetings Act or Brown Act, which is something I've regularly cited but never gone to court on. And more on that probably in subsequent shows. But getting back to the 24th of May, 2 days ago, I really was upset at what the city council had done. And also it was Matthews, the mayor, was threatening people in the audience who were expressing outrage. And David Silva said, come and arrest me, come and arrest me. And Matthews said, you have to leave. And David Silva said, I will not. And the officer in charge who was taking Sergeant Bush's place, I think his name is Burris, Officer Brad Burris. I guess that's what his name tag said. Came over and stood next to Silva in an official-looking way. But David refused to leave, and then Cynthia Matthews backed down. Said, oh, well, he'll be quiet, he'll be quiet. And Silva was quiet after that. Relatively quiet. Perhaps we need to make more noise at City Council, I don't know. But in any case, I continued to do recording throughout this process. I don't know if I actually caught that on audio, but Bren Lehrer called over Brad Burris to her and kind of pointed in my direction or had some conference with him. I don't know actually if she was, I didn't hear what they said, but the next thing he did was move to remove my machine from from its place near the speaker's podium. And I sort of jumped up, grabbed the machine, and sat down again so that he couldn't take it. He then went back to his spot. This is a similar dance that I'd done with Sergeant Bush. I did it again. He started to come over, and I grabbed it and came back to my seat, which, again, was 2 feet away. I was in a better position to operate than he was. So he came down and sat down next to me and said, you can't record it from here and here. Sergeant Bush has told you that. And I said, Officer Burris, something like this, I said, you know, if this is not a personal matter, and you shouldn't take this personally at all, but I'm a reporter. I have a right to record. Don't let the counsel fool you. I intend to continue to record, and if you attempt to stop me by taking this reporter, this machine, you will not be able to do so without an arrest. I mean, I won't resist you violently, but I will insist you arrest me before you attempt to confiscate or remove my machine from where I can set it up in order to get a recording so people who are my listeners can hear, and also because I have a right to do so. And it's wrong to surrender these rights because the council makes peculiar rules that are repressive. It's also in violation of court orders that, not that they were directed specifically against this city council, but a court case that I pursued for a decade through the city, actually I should say city local attorneys, civil rights attorneys David Beauvais and Kate Wells, with able assistance from Becky Johnson and other folks working, pursued when they had me arrested because I made a silent mock Nazi salute, meaning you're acting like a bunch of fascists. And this kind of, you know, got national coverage, went all over the place. But the ultimate ruling by the court was a violation of the rules is not a disruption of city council unless there's an actual disruption. And if the city council disrupts its own meeting, that doesn't count as an actual disruption. That was implicit, that second part. But the other part was rather explicit. So I have since tried to challenge various council rules by ignoring them. So, for instance, when I talk to the council or I talk up at the podium, which when I'm really talking to the television cameras and the general audience, because I don't think the council is listening to what I have to say, and then I turn to the audience in the room, and I speak to them. The first time I did this recently, the mayor shouted, "Sit down!" And she turned off my mic, turn to us. You can't talk to them that way. And blah, blah. I said, "No. You know, I certainly can. You're interrupting me. I have 3 minutes. Right? I had 2 minutes. She's been giving people 2 minutes, hence my name for her, 2 Minute Matthews." And so I ignored that rule. And other people began to ignore the rule, too, although most people are, again, under this impression that if only you're courteous and sweet and respectful and obsequious to the city council, they'll pay some attention to what you say. Isn't true at all. Just like with the police. And people in positions of authority tend to respect power and authority. That's all they respect, or at least insofar as they identify with their positions of power and authority, that's a large part of what they respect. So it's more important to keep focusing on what you're trying to do, on your rights to do so, and on the support you have in the audience you're trying to communicate to. If you're trying to get a message out to the community to change something that needs to be changed, or to publicize an abuse that needs to be publicized in the community, and not to be sidetracked by city council orders, rules, commands, the presence of a police officer, all that kind of thing. And it's hard to do. I mean, it's frightening. I mean, who wants to go to jail? Who wants to then have to go to court, maybe, or at least look at court? I mean, I have never been convicted of anything I've done at city council and rarely charged. Charges happened over 25 years ago when they tried to try us for chatting with a council member, being in the council chamber 2 minutes after the council had closed. We were considering a sleep out in the council at that time in protest of the anti-homeless sleeping ban law that is currently the ordinance in Santa Cruz and was then as well. Anyway, so Burris, the officer on Tuesday, said, "Look, don't, you know, I want you to, you know, obey the rules." And I explained to him, the rules are what they are. My rights are what they are. And I would encourage you, don't take any action unless you actually see me disrupting the meeting. Otherwise, you can be held liable. Make sure that they, the mayor or some other council member, makes a citizen's arrest because they claim I'm disrupting the meeting. Then you won't be as accountable, though I think there is still a certain accountability. If a police officer wants to arrest me and take me into custody, they have an obligation, I believe. It's even discretionary. They don't even have to give me a citation. If somebody makes a complaint against somebody else for violating the law, they have to file a report, and the DA can decide whether to file a charge. The police officer on the scene can also decide whether to arrest the person or even to cite them. All these are discretionary. It used to be you had to do these things, but the law changed in 2003. As far as I know, this has changed again, which may be the case, but I'm not aware of it. So I told Officer Burris, you know, don't put yourself in jeopardy by doing, you know, by being kind of bamboozled into asserting authority that the council is afraid to take any responsibility for. And he didn't say anything, but I sat there and recorded the rest of the meeting without interference, as much of it as I wanted to, and talked to him later. And outside he told me, well, I make my own decisions. I didn't see you disrupting anything. As far as I'm concerned, that's a council rule. It is not a law that you're violating, so I'm not seeing any violation of the law. And he's completely right. And it gave me a small sense of satisfaction that these council members who so regularly bully the audience with the police were not able to do so on this occasion. In this case, it wasn't even a council member. It was the city administrator clerk, Bren Lehrer. And in case you wonder who she is, she's the person who sits, if you're facing the city council from the audience, she's the second from the extreme right, appropriately enough, on that semicircular dais that the council sits on. Well, that took a while. Now let's get back to the streets and the various interviews on the 22nd of May when we were trying to get, to give vendors the opportunity to get together, to get people opposed this chance to get together, even though we knew it was pretty much a doomed effort. Really, the effort looked forward to the future, looked forward to down the road, because if people massively resist this ordinance, it's going to be make it too costly to enforce, then they won't be able to impose it on people and destroy the street life that is their intention, is to transform it, unfortunately, into the kind of mall-like area that we're all too familiar with in other cities.
So we have a man who actually remembers the Occupy days. What's your name?
I go by Wolf.
And Wolf, what do you remember about those days, and how would you compare it with these days?
I ain't got a ticket yet, so.
How long you been in town with your backpack and your long knife on your hip?
Yeah, they don't really trip on the knife, though, because it's a tool, and I sleep in a tent. So they're like, I had one person ask me, I was like, dude, I got a cat, and I sleep in the woods. I need a knife. And they leave it alone.
And have you heard of the Freedom Sleepers?
Got back to the town. Did I remember Kimberly Freedom? I used to kick it down here with her.
Oh, for sure.
Kimberly Freedom, yeah, Freedom was... But actually, what we've been doing, what Zob has been doing every week is...
Shaggy Dog?
Well, Zob is actually the name of... Yeah, well, that's interesting. Zob is the man, along with other people, been coming to City Hall every Tuesday night and sleeping out in protest of the sleeping ban. Kind of a mini Occupy, but only for one night a week.
I got a cat, dude. I guess that knows.
Name of the cat is?
Yeah, that's Lucifer. He's a Siamese Persian mix. I found him in an abandoned house out in Salina.
Hey there, Lucifer. Well, take care of that cat. And,
yeah, that's the point.
Welcome back to Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
We've been talking with
him. Cool.
So here's a man with a notebook, and you're keeping an eye on Santa Cruz downtown?
Yeah.
And
for some kind of school project, or just because you're interested yourself, or what's the reason?
Both.
And what kind of aspects of the downtown are you looking for?
Right now, I've been taking a look at the vendor life and interviewing a lot of the vendors around here and trying to get a sense of what it's like.
You mean before the vending ban comes up day after tomorrow?
Yes.
Will you be at city council to observe the wildlife at the council?
Likely not. I'm a little bit busy. I would definitely love to be there.
School are you associated with?
I'm at UC Santa Cruz.
And is there much feeling up there about this ordinance one way or the other?
No, I don't believe very many people up at UC Santa Cruz know about this at all.
And you, of course, will be spreading the word.
Yes.
And actually, Zob here has got a flyer. Do we have any flyers about that to give us? Yeah.
I signed it a while ago.
What's your name?
Shane.
Are you interested in coming to the Freedom Sleepers on Tuesday night, where there'll be more, maybe some vendors, mostly people outside fighting the sleeping ban? Does that interest you much?
It does interest me. Tuesday night wouldn't work for me, though. Again, UC Santa Cruz students are pretty busy, unfortunately.
So have you approached any UCSU students and asked them either to sign a petition, or in fact, would you be interested in carrying a petition up there?
Perhaps, yes.
Do we have extra copies of the petition?
I think it's Shindig.
Did you assign Shindig's copy of the petition? Should I get you a petition so you might be interested in passing it on or asking sympathizers to, not that it's going to do a hell of a lot of good, but to help out? So.
Yes.
Well, let's do that right now, shall we? Shindig, you got an extra copy of the petition? Let's take it up to UCS and I'm pressing him to do it. You don't need to drive you away. Wendy. And you?
Great. Just be lucky you don't wear lip gloss because my hair.
Well, if you need a hug, you let me know.
Okay, definitely.
All right.
Do you need a hug?
Yes, of course. Come to me.
Oh, I can help.
What's your name?
Shannon.
And you are?
Shane.
Shane?
Oh. Shane and Shannon.
This is Shindig. Shindig. Hey. Party going on here.
Yeah. Has he been telling you about this exciting new get rid of all the vendors approach?
Yeah.
Last we can clear his kind out of Pacific Avenue.
Oh, wow.
You know, we don't want his kind around. Look at him. I mean, what kind of, come on.
Yeah.
That's not what we want him to be.
The businesses.
Yeah, these are fine businesses. They pay good rents. They have nice signs.
They pay their workers well.
They pay their workers an incredible wage. I
should just get a job in here. Right?
Yeah, just get a job selling, I don't know, I mean, like
counterfeit goods.
And these are goods from a different country where they have a decent labor situation where people are paid more reasonably. So, what do you think of this vendor situation?
And, of course, all those are sarcastic comments. No, they don't pay good wages. Abroad, it's even worse. This counterfeit goods reference is because that's one of the claims as to why they need to have laws that ban vending on Pacific Avenue, because people are dealing drugs and selling counterfeit goods. It's kind of like accusing homeless people of creating a crime wave because they're sleeping in the Poganip and the parks at night, having nowhere else to go. And that is considered to be criminal behavior because a bunch of bigots are calling the police on them all the time, which is taking up police time. Steve Clark gave that misleading, he's our deputy chief, or their deputy chief, if you will, that misleading characterization of the homeless way back in 2013 in order to establish the so-called public safety task force, which, of course, I call the public hysteria task force. But from that, a lot of bad legislation has come out, and it's really an indication of the tenor of the times and has not been fought very there's no high-profile fighting against it except some of us, some lone voices, I think. I pride myself in being one of those, but I'm only one. However, if I had a singing voice and a good set of lyrics, I might be singing something like this.
job's begun. Job number two comes at 12:45. Take the bus down and wait in the hot sun. You'll be feeling tired in the morning. 2 hours turns the clock, waiting in line at the auction block. Economic systems got you locked, got you waking too early in the morning. Paycheck comes and it's nothing new. You work 6 hours, got paid for two. Buy a cheap dinner for your kids and you, and you'll spend it all by the morning. Settling now for minimum wage, waiting for the day when you turn the page. It's bound to happen one of these days, it'll bring a brand new morning. Gonna build power with your working hands, organize and make demands. If they refuse, you're gonna take a stand, and you're gonna feel it in the morning. And once that living wage is won, there'll be dignity and power in the stadium, and you'll keep organizing until it's worker run. It'll bring a brand new morning.
And that was two more by Ryan Harvey, Till It's Worker Run and Talkin' Union. So we got about 15 minutes left in the show. We're going to listen a little bit more to interviews, and then I'm going to play a little something from The Grapes of Wrath, which I enjoyed playing a bit from, I think it was in the last show or maybe the show before. You can get the entire 18-disc set from the public library and listen to it, which is what I'm doing. And I want to share a bit of it with you, but first, let's finish up with a few interviews, and then we'll get to The Grapes of Wrath.
So, we're talking with
Gregory.
Gregory, you say you had an encounter with a host.
I had three encounters in the month of January, because at that time,
these blue boxes that they had painted on Pacific Avenue for performers and vendors to be with inside had been faded away, or
right,
washed away. So I had three encounters or three clashes with the hostess. We're going to refer to them in this interview, hostess or
the hostile
brutality. Hostile brutality people.
Right.
The third and final one, I was performing. Now, where is that with a type of it?
In front of the Pacific Trading Company.
Okay, in front of the Pacific Trading Company, I was there at my third and final encounter in the month of January. So,
what did they say to you?
Two fellows came up to me, and one of them said, "You need to be in the blue box." But, of course, the blue boxes are barely visible. And there was a barely visible one to our left. And I said, "You know, you can hardly see these anymore. They need to repaint them. And they're going to repaint them." The fellow that was telling me to, I need to move into it. And I says, "When? Next month." Okay, so this happens in the end of January. February rolls along. Come in February, they still haven't been repainted. Luckily, the city has started this new program where they meet with different neighborhoods, all representatives from city government, fire department, police department, city council. So they had one for the east side of Santa Cruz. I attended it. Luckily, the mayor and Micah Posner, or is it Mika Posner?
Micah Posner.
Micah Posner were both present.
Mm-hmm.
I told him about my situation with the hospitable people.
The hospitable people.
And I'd mentioned about I asked the mayor when they were going to repaint the boxes on Pacific because they're barely visible, and if you're not in the wrong, right, if you're in the wrong
city. Mayor Matthews or Mayor Lane?
Mayor Lane. Uh-huh. And he said he was not, what was this, it was this.
So he wasn't mayor at the time, but he was previously mayor.
Go ahead. The present mayor.
Current mayor is Cynthia Matthews.
Okay.
But he was the mayor last year.
Okay, he was the mayor last year.
And he's still on the council.
Still on the council, okay. I was assuming he was mayor as of this February. Anyway, he was not aware, first of all, that the boxes had been faded away. So therefore, he had no agenda for them to be repainted.
I guess he doesn't spend much time downtown, does he?
Obviously not. And this is, then I asked Micah Posner, excuse me.
Right.
And we got some traffic in the background.
I can still hear you.
Okay, thank you. I mentioned it to him, and he was not aware that they were...
he doesn't spend that much time downtown.
No. And I had mentioned the artist, Alex Skelton, that had gotten arrested... by this time, back in August, and how they decided his art to get
fired. Alex and Job.
Yeah, and they said good for him. Well, Mr. Punch said good for him that it beat his case, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But he's out there facing two more charges.
Right, I'm aware of that.
Right.
So, turns out that hospitable bonehead had lied to me. If neither the past...
The hostile brutality guys lied to you? How can that be?
It's easy.
Oh, no, for heaven's sake, you must be joking.
I wish I was.
Oh, yeah, you are.
So they make up these things to save face and to make us move where there is no longer any boxes to be in, you know.
So I guess the essence is, don't box me in.
Don't box me in.
I think that's what
not in Santa Cruz.
That's what I said. But so you spoke at the last city council meeting.
And what happened was the blue boxes were first, they removed half of them at the insistence of merchants and who knows. The decisions were made behind closed doors by Scott Collins, Julie Hendy, God knows who else was involved. And in the late spring of last year, half of the 60-odd boxes disappeared. So... in response, a few months later, Keith McHenry put blue markings on the sidewalk to replace those boxes so that people could once more resume the public spaces without, you know, performances in public spaces and enjoying performances in the public spaces as they were wont to do in ages past. In response, he was arrested, handcuffed, taken to jail. So was his companion, Abby Samuels. They had to face repeated appearances in short. They were in court. They were originally charged with felony charges. Sounds a bit like what happened to the Santa Cruz 11. And eventually, McHenry, I think he's still on probation. I'm not sure, but he had an ankle cuff on him to sort of a substitute for jail. And these blue boxes faded. They were not really visible. And in addition, there were people resisting them very directly, Alex Skelton and Geoff Jones. So this is kind of the background to what Greg is talking about. And he did speak at City Council. Unfortunately, none of the other people who you hear on this audio or have heard did make it to City Council to speak on this issue. They did speak, however, to you through this radio station, and I'm glad they did.
The last one that I was aware of, and I believe that was in, it was the one concerning 2013. I believe it was October. I know it was between sometime last fall. The last one that I was aware of concerning the ordinance for street performers.
Interesting. Well, that would have been, that actually would have been, wow.
More than a year ago?
Yeah, it hasn't been on the agenda for, it actually came up in April of this year, and then again on May 10th, and now at May 24th it will be coming up.
Okay, unfortunately I missed the one that wasn't aware of it. Otherwise it would have been.
Well, of course, May 24th is coming up. Not that it's much after tomorrow. At 2:30 in the afternoon, they'll be doing their shit.
Good to know, and it's important that all those that are concerned, all those whose livelihood depends on having the option or the freedom to vend or perform performance art on Pacific Avenue, should attend the street performance.
I think the other thing that is we are encouraging people to form a street vendors association guild group to have more power.
And it is really hard to hear, and I think we're going to pause here.
Chapter 14. The Western Land, nervous under the beginning change. The Western States, nervous as horses before a thunderstorm. The great owners, nervous, sensing a change, knowing nothing of the nature of the change. The great owners striking at the immediate thing, the widening government, the growing labor unity, striking at new taxes, at plans, not knowing these things are results, not causes. Results, not causes. Results, not causes. The causes lie deep and simply. The causes are a hunger in a stomach, multiplied a million times. A hunger in a single soul, hunger for joy and some security, multiplied a million times. Muscles and mind aching to grow, to work, to create, multiplied a million times. The last clear, definite function of man, muscles aching to work, minds aching to create beyond the single need. This is man. To build a wall, to build a house, a dam, and in the wall and house and dam to put something of man's self, and to man's self take back something of the wall, the house, the dam, to take hard muscles from the lifting, to take the clear lines and form from conceiving. For man, unlike any other thing, organic or inorganic in the universe, grows beyond his work. Walks up the stairs of his concepts, emerges ahead of his accomplishments. This you may say of man, when theories change and crash, when schools, philosophies, when narrow dark alleys of thought, national, religious, economic, grow and disintegrate, man reaches, stumbles forward, painfully, mistakenly sometimes. Having stepped forward, he may slip back, but only half a step, never the full step back. This you may say and know it, and know it. This you may know when the bombs plummet out of the black plains on the marketplace, when prisoners are stuck like pigs, when the crushed bodies drain filthily in the dust. You may know it in this way. If the step were not being taken, If the stumbling forward ache were not alive, the bombs would not fall, the throats would not be cut. Fear the time when the bombs stop falling while the bombers live, for every bomb is proof that the spirit has not died. And fear the time when the strikes stop while the great owners live, for every little beaten strike is proof that the step is being taken. And this you can know. Fear the time when man's self will not suffer and die for a concept. For this one quality is the foundation of man's self, and this one quality is man, distinctive in the universe. The Western states nervous under the beginning change. Texas and Oklahoma, Kansas and Arkansas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, a single family moved from the land. Pa borrowed money from the bank, and now the bank wants the land. The land company, that's the bank when it has land, wants tractors, not families, on the land. Is a tractor bad? Is the power that turns the long furrows wrong? If this tractor were ours, it would be good. Not mine, but ours. If our tractor turned the long furrows of our land, it would be good. Not my land, but ours. We could love that tractor then as we have loved this land when it was ours. But this tractor does two things. It turns the land and turns us off the land. There is little difference between this tractor and a tank. The people are driven, intimidated, hurt by both. We must think about this. One man, one family driven from the land. This rusty car creaking along the highway to the west. I lost my land. A single tractor took my land. I am alone, and I am bewildered. But in the night, one family camps in a ditch, and another family pulls in, and the tents come out. The two men squat on their hams, and the women and children listen. Here is the node. You who hate change and fear revolution, keep these two squatting men apart. Make them hate, fear, suspect each other. Here is the onlodger of the thing you fear. This is the zygote. For here, I lost my land is changed. A cell is split, and from its splitting grows the thing you hate. We lost our land. The danger is here, for two men are not as lonely and perplexed as one. And from this first we, there grows a still more dangerous thing. I have a little food, plus I have none. If from this problem the sum is we have a little food, the thing is on its way. The movement has direction. Only a little multiplication now, and this land, this tractor are ours. The two men squatting in a ditch, the little fire, the side meat stewing in a single pot, the silent, stone-eyed women, behind the children listening with their souls to words their minds do not understand. The night draws down. The baby has a cold. Here, take this blanket. It's wool. It was my mother's blanket. Take it for the baby. This is the thing to bomb. This is the beginning, from I to we. If you who own the things people must have could understand this, you might preserve yourself. If you could separate causes from results, if you could know that Paine, Marx, Jefferson, Lenin were results, not causes, you might survive. But that you cannot know. For the quality of owning freezes you forever into I, and cuts you off forever from the we. The Western states are nervous under the beginning change. Need is the stimulus to concept, concept to action. A 500,000 people moving over the country. 1,000,000 more restive, ready to move. 10,000,000 more feeling the first nervousness. And tractors, turning the multiple furrows in the vacant land.
That's it for Bathrop Spears' Broadside. Let's go out on the Ryan Harvey song, Stronger Than You Think. Back again on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning with a longer show if I get it together to do it. Let's hope I do. And I'll talk at you then. In the meantime, give a call to 423-4833 if you want to get involved in fighting to restore public space, saving civil rights of the entire community, and not to mention the poorest members of it. 423-4833.
You might be stronger than you think. Might be stronger than you think. Just try to break your fear so you